Congressman John Chimkus on the other end of the line. John, morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you, Tom?
Well, you sound good.
Yeah.
So, and you know, we got a lot to talk about, so off to the races, if you don't mind.
Let's go.
State of the Union, State of the Union address.
Awesome.
You know, there was a lot of things there, a lot of things to unpack. I think it was an hour and 20 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, it was pretty long.
All right, so first off, State of the Union, then we'll break it into subcategories.
Sure.
What do you think? What'd you think?
Well, I thought it was awesome. I think, you know, the President of the United States is unpredictable. And so the fact that he stayed on script and raised the issues, I think what I liked about it, too, is we were given a heads up on some of the major issues, like we need to deal with infrastructure. We all kind of know that. Obviously, he talked through the tax reform bill and the benefits to all Americans, and we're seeing benefits of that even in the report from yesterday. You know, immigration challenges. He laid out his compromise plan, and not well received by Democrats, but some of it not well received by Republicans. But you know, he is. You know, he's not a full-born conservative. He is more a populist, and he's trying to get things done. I just thought it was great. I think most Republicans were very, very pleased with his delivery, his demeanor, and the speech as in total.
75% approval rating in a CBS poll.
Wow. You know, I think because he looked presidential, sometimes when he gets off on tweeting and his personal communication styles with the American people, people still dislike that. But they do want a president who's presidential, and he came off that way.
Line of the night, we have dreamers too.
Yeah, and we are. And that, I mean, that's the whole idea of we're one country. We shouldn't segment ourselves into different groups, and we should allow all people to try to drive and reach their full potential. I mean, the best thing, the great equalizer is jobs, and not a welfare state. And I think, and then the hope and the opportunity to advance if you want to.
Tax reform, and you took a swipe in particular in last Sunday night's press release out of your office. You do a weekly newsletter, and talking about the scraps. Well, a lot of companies, Hostess, I think, one of the newer ones, they're giving $750 in cash, $500 to 401k plan for their 1,036 hourly workers, and by the way, a year's worth of Hostess, which, you know, had gone out of business not all that long ago. If we remember, we thought there weren't going to be any Twinkies left. But when you look at the list of companies, Alaska Airlines, American Airlines, Bank of America, B&T, Citizens Financial, Comcast, you can literally go down, and this is not a partisan list. This is from the USA Today, and yet it's still scraps.
Well, the bottom line is the proof will be in the pudding. And in other words, as this thing continues to move forward, we're glad that these companies are seeing the benefits of tax reform and passing it on to their workers. And, you know, we believe that's the way the economy works. There's more revenue. There's more success. That any businesses want to keep good employees. I mean, they do that by paying them wages that they can afford to pay, and with tax reform, they can pay a little bit more. Healthcare benefits, you're listing it. So we're very excited about it. This is different. I think Democrats thought that tax reform would be our healthcare, but as healthcare rolled out, it became a terrible plan to provide healthcare to Americans. I think they thought that's the way what would happen in tax reform. What we're seeing is tax reform is delivering on the way that Republicans and conservatives, market economic folks, believe that as the economy grows, everyone benefits. And it's better to have a company give you a pay wage than have the government force an increased wage, which then causes a loss of jobs. I think that's why Democrats are so angry, because this. Right now, it's proving out. The numbers from today rolled out 20,000 more employed Americans than projected. I think it's up to 200,000. And we have the fastest wage rate increase in 8 years. Those are pretty good numbers to defend.
Right. Yeah. And what we're, of course, referencing is the numbers that came out this week. Non-farm payrolls rose by 200,000 plus in January. And then, of course, your unemployment rate holding at 4.1. Average hourly earnings increased 2.9%, the best gain since 2009. We can go on. The Atlanta Federal Bank estimating yesterday gross domestic product first quarter surged to 5.4%, best since 2009. Yesterday, the Energy Information Administration says U.S. oil production hit $10 million per day, first time since the 1970s. You can literally go down the list, and still the Democrats say this is a terrible idea. And they say, one, this is a one-time bonus and it scraps, as their word chosen, because it's one time and it's a little tiny thing. I think there's a couple of stories interesting on how much less companies are paying in taxes with this deal. But still, tax reform somewhere to live. I mean, I've got people who are literally texting me and messaging me saying, this is how much more I've got in my check, retirement check. Thank you. To companies that are people who are here saying companies sharing their giving employees shares of the company. And still, everybody takes the state address, State of the Union, and sets on their hands for every single thing, including parents that are grieving for the loss of their child in MS-13. Is the takeaway from the state of the state, yes, the economy's good, but it doesn't matter what happens, the Democrats are going to resist.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation, and where I was seated this year, I always sit with the Democrat, because it helps temper my getting too over-enthusiastic or getting too angry. We visit, we talk, I stand up sometimes, he stands up sometimes, we stand up together sometimes, and he was able to snatch some seats right up in the front row, which I'm usually not a front row type of guy. So I didn't really see the response of the Democrats because I was on the Democrat side, and he would stand up with me now and then, and we would talk. I said, "Oh, I'm going to stand up on this one." He goes, "Oh, that's okay." And I said, "Oh, I'm going to stay with you on this one." So I was just shocked to read the stories and then to see the photos. It was pretty embarrassing, and I don't think it helped the Democrats at all to show such defiance and such hatred that even when the president was talking about things of faith, in God we trust, honoring the fallen, to not respond to that. I mean, you don't have to do very much. Just stand up and clap, do a little claps, and sit on down. I mean, but just to forcefully keep yourself in the seat is embarrassing.
Luis Gutierrez walking because he was apparently triggered by the chant of USA, USA. Early, ready to, walked out.
All I can do is chuckle. I mean, well, maybe I shouldn't chuckle. Maybe I should just be sad because I had never seen that in a chamber before. I think the closest thing I remember is when members held up the finger with the blue on it, identifying voting going on in Iraq or something. Right. So, which was a very poignant event.
Very often, John, I find there's little things that give you peeks into other people and other people as a group. The former First Lady, first media interview after leaving the White House, telling Ellen DeGeneres that all we have left is hope. All right, that's a pretty stark message. I was being in my facetious mode earlier this morning, says, and they say President Trump is the fearmonger. We only have hope left. There are a lot of numbers out here, including the African-American and Hispanic employment numbers, which also, I saw like one person clap kind of like a little and at least twice people, sit down, you're not supposed to stand up for this. But, I mean, isn't that the glimpse into the thing that would leave people walking out of a State of the Union address that all we have left is hope because everything's terrible?
Yeah, I can't. This is, we're human beings, and you would hope we'd be called to our better angels, but we are also are emotionally entrenched. The State of the Union is a special time. You think we can overcome some of those partisan divides, but I think it was on full show a couple nights ago when their partisan position overweighed their listening to the speech.
Today, everybody kind of just looking at their watches and going, well, when's this FISA memo coming out?
I think today. I've read it. I think the biggest concern is for top secret memos, you've got to protect sources and methods. That means how do you get the information and who do you get the information from? Because you don't want to divulge those things. And the memo doesn't do that. It's a compilation of, as Trey Gowdy would say, things that the FBI has already said. And we'll let the public choose. I think part of the reason the FBI is going so freakish right now is I think they're going to be embarrassed. And it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. It's the people who are in charge making decisions at that time. The legislative branch, Article 1, we have the role of oversight of the federal government, and that we're exercising our right of oversight.
It's going to be an interesting item. We know this, what it means. I was once again yesterday saying, I've had a number of people in law enforcement look at me and going, if you haven't done anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I think that's the case.
Well, it's good for the gander thing.
If it's good and methods. And there is questionable activity done by anybody in the federal government. Look at what's going on with the public's doing it right now with the Me Too movement. I mean, they're identifying people who abuse their position with women of the opposite sex or whatever, and they're being run out of office without even due process. And now there's a question of, wait a second, we better at least have some due process. So this is this transparency is just, then let's have the debate to see if what was being done was correct and appropriate or not.
Okay, here's the thing. Here's my confused thing for the day. When I'm reading stories about the American waterways, all right, this was a change in the EPA. The EPA would have been Wednesday, pushed back its applicable date for 2015 rule defining government power over small waterways by 2 years. I thought this was done away with by the executive order. I don't understand why they're pushing the rules back by 2 years, but the executive order was already issued February 28th to repeal it. I don't understand. John?
Well, what you read exactly is what went on. It didn't get totally repealed. What they did was delay. The issue was in the process of being promulgated. I mean, it's just a bureaucratic process of having to go. The delay in the review will allow them to do get more comments, and they're trying to forestall, the courts reigniting themselves in this debate until they've done their due diligence as prescribed by federal rules and regulations.
All right. It's interesting because when I kind of categorize things in my mind, I've got big event, I've got hearts, I got wallets. I put everything in a category. It's the only way I can stay sane. And I put this under the category of farmers, miners, jobs, Southern Illinois. That's my category for this story. Correctly? And it's a correct category, John?
Yeah, I think so. Waters of the U.S. was an attempt by the administration to control the waterways. The Constitution says inland waterway systems have to be navigable. Navigable is the federal government's role is in the navigable waterways. Maybe the Wabash, right? Maybe definitely the Ohio, the Mississippi, maybe parts of the obviously the Illinois, but maybe parts of the Kaskaskia, not all of the Kaskaskia. So the question is, what did you do about the streams that lead into that goes in the farmers' backyards, and should the federal government have jurisdiction to tell how a farmer should be able to control a ditch that leads to a stream that leads into a branch into the Kaskaskia that eventually gets into the Kaskaskia?
We got a thing here, and I don't know if you're aware of it, they're called grudge ditches. You ever heard of these?
No, I haven't.
It's just like that. It's between two pieces of property. You got a grudge ditch, in that grudge ditch. That's like good fences make good neighbors.
Right.
But they're filled with water, right? And they run sometimes right between two areas of fields. I mean, between the 40 and the 60, and that's where your land is, and never the twain shall meet. And I mean,
our concern is that the federal government would say you can't have a grudge ditch.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that you can't use this. I mean, literally controlling the ditch up to the back of your house. And no, you cannot catch that rainwater off your roof. It's supposed to go into that ditch and supposed to go to the river.
Right.
So, I mean, we've literally gotten into that category. John, I need to change gears on you because we're getting ready to run out of time. So I want to change gears. I want you to go into election mode here, okay? Because I've been talking to your opponents. And Carl Sporer, in particular, on Monday, joined us here on the show. And he point blank and he says, what has John Shimkus done for Southern Illinois? We know you've been active in the Waterways Act, okay? We just talked about that. But, John, I want to put it to you now this way. As a campaign and coming up for re-election, what have you done for your district?
Well, I think everybody can look at their paycheck this month and see a little bit more money in there, and that's that tax reform we talked about. I think optimism and growth. The opportunity for the agriculture community to have open and free markets is a big part in fighting for Illinois coal, as you know, tremendously against the Obama administration. And we, in essence, have stopped the war on coal, and we're trying to now regrow that. Recently, the Delta Area Commission has, you know, approved the levee repair at Brookport. I've been working on that forever, and I'm thankful for the Delta Area Commission for helping provide that funds, and so I do know that the people of Southern Illinois have been very, very kind to me, and have sent me back. So they must think I'm doing something good.
All right, we are. I mean, 'tis the season. So you know, the next couple of times you and I talk, I think we'll be talking more about these items because here's one of the items. Excuse me, John. Only John heard me do that. So, there are some things that just bother me to no damn end, and I can't get rid of them. Okay, and so they bother me until I try to do something about them. Now, this story came out about opioids, and I've asked many people in their election modes, you know, about how do these pills in such phenomenal numbers. I can do math. You know, when guys are and women are addicted, they got 10 of these a day, they've got to take 13, 16, 18, that this is not a number that comes out of stealing them from grandma's cabinet, not when you're taking 13 pills every day to keep your habit fed. And this new report about West Virginia, well, it's actually just coming up in congressional hearings, that they, you know, these huge amounts of pills that were sent to pharmacies, literally millions of pills for a town that has 2,900 people. There is something going on out there, John, when it comes to opioids. I know that Mike Boss is involved in this. Are you involved in this opioid fight as well?
Well, at the committee is really Energy and Commerce Committee, which I serve on, and it's our oversight committee that's doing most of this research. You're right. So there's going to be a hearing on this pill dumping, and I think there's criminality. And I think it'll end up, I mean, you can't, when you got millions versus thousands, how do you justify, and if you're going to follow that link, I think some people are going to go to jail because of this, and they rightly should. We also have to make sure that the prescribers and the docs who are pain managers are ethical and helping get people where they take care of their pain but don't get hooked on the pain. It's really a sad thing. The president raised it again in the State of the Union. The stories are horrendous. My colleague from New York, who I was sitting next to, one of the reasons why we're in the front row is because he wanted to make an appeal to the president because he was asked by the father of an opioid abuse death that he would plead with the president. So that's kind of why we were in the front row, and he did that night at the State of the Union.
All right, because when you see this number out of this West Virginia location, the pharmacy, two pharmacies sending 20 million pills to a town of 2,900 people, that, you know, somebody, because, I mean, I know pharmacists, and they talked about the tracking. I mean, you know, if you cocaine hydrochloride, you're every grain you're responsible for in weights. And they'll take you to jail. They'll close your pharmacy down. I know it's happened. I know people in Southern Illinois happened to. But here, millions, and that's money. And, you know, that there's something going on here. And, well, as you mentioned, criminality, has there been, you use the term pill dumping, stealing that, by the way.
Right. And my friend, Congressman McKinley from West Virginia is, as you can imagine with these stories, I don't think that's his district, but it's a part of his state. He's been really pushing the committee to move quickly on this report.
All right. Congressman John Chimkas. John, thank you for being so gracious with your time and so much of it. Really do appreciate it.
Not a problem. You have a great day.
Hey, you got time for a quick one?
I do.
The president yesterday at the Republican retreat saying either we're going to have to compromise with the Democrats or we're going to have to win more seats, talking specifically about immigration. I thought he cut right down to it. That's it right there, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's right. So I think we've got a very compassionate nation. These adults, now adults, who are brought over as young kids, legal status is, I think, something doable. I think my constituents have a problem with the citizenship debate, but if the president moves that way with border security, ending chain migration, and entering the lottery, that might be the compromise position.